Tonight on Arena. We celebrate 30 years of the Divine Comedy with its creator and frontman, Neil Hannon, and Tara Rocht is creating a mezzo masterpiece. You can contact us on 51551 or tweet at RTE Arena. 30 years ago, a Northern Irish band with a name inspired by a 12th century poem by Dante released the first of their 12 albums. That career that followed was defined by musical shape-shifting, experimentation, nods to culture from Anton Chekhov to Father Ted, and from eccentricity to incisive commentary. The band is, of course, the Divine Comedy. And this month, its enormous back catalogue has been remastered and brought together in a collection entitled Venus, Cupid, Folly and Time, 30 Years of the Divine Comedy. In a moment, I'll be talking to the one constant in the band since its formation in 1989, that's Neil Hannon. But first, let's have a listen to one of the many high points from that illustrious career, going back to 1996 and the album Casanova, This Is Something for the Weekend. And joining me now to look back on 30 years of the Divine Comedy is the creative force behind the band, Neil Hannon. Neil, for many people, that sound will always represent the Divine Comedy. It's big, it's expansive, orchestral, and then with that breezy voice out front and centre, your voice. Is that quintessential Divine Comedy for you?
Hi, Kay. No, it's just one of the many sides of the coin, which is the Divine Comedy. I love orchestral pop. I love orchestral music. I also love pop music, and I love an awful lot of other things, and they all get an airing every now and again. Just depends what mood I'm in and how much money I have.
So that sound, as we say, is very distinctive, very much the Divine Comedy. But this wonderful collection, Venus, Cupid, Folly and Time, there's essays in with all the various albums, and Liberation is, I think, the album where you felt finally free to do what you wanted to do. Where were you before Liberation?
I was in sort of indie schmindy heaven. You know, I was just making noisy guitar music, really, with a band that had grown out of my school band, really. And we developed into a nice little kind of REM-like combo, and then got signed to a little label called Satanta, which operated out of London. And we went to London, but we were very sort of wet behind the ears, provincial kids from Fermanagh. And it was not fun, you know, living in squats that had been broken kindly for us by Keith Cullen of Satanta. It wasn't a glamorous rock star life to begin with. And eventually it sort of rather imploded. And I went home to my mummy and daddy's and sort of worked on Liberation by myself.
And what was the sound? Did you know the sound you were looking for then, realising that you didn't want the kind of indie guitar band?
I hadn't really a clue what I wanted, but I knew what I liked. And I just discovered Scott Walker, the sort of 60s baritone orchestral pop legend. And also Michael Nyman was a big figure for me, with his sort of almost punky kind of classical music. And a sort of a combination of the two, but also with lots of, late 80s indie and sort of late 70s, early 80s UK pop music of the sort of Elvis Costello variety mixed in. And it sort of all splurged out in that first album. Liberation is a bit of a sort of crazy mixed up kid. It goes all over the place, but it's sort of it's like a one of those tasting plates you get at very posh restaurants before your main meal.
Your cultural references are a bit of a tasting plate as well, aren't they? I mean, there's obviously Dante, you took the name of the band from the Divine Comedy, his famous poem. Then in Liberation, there's the track Bernie Bobs Her Hair, which is a nod to F. Scott Fitzgerald. And then you have William Wordsworth, Anton Chekhov, and various people. And then Noel Coward is another reference. Is that a misspent youth reading novels up in Fermanagh?
Well, I read a lot of novels, but weirdly enough, there's a song called The Book Lovers on Promenade, and I still haven't read about three quarters of that list of novelists. I kind of love all of these things, but I'm really not terribly erudite, I'm not a fast reader. So I think what happens is that when I really kind of take into a book and I finish it, I get so sort of deep into it that it tends to come out in a song because I've enjoyed it so much. But in my sort of middle-aged years, I tend to read more history, I must say.
Yes, Foreverland is quite strongly influenced by history, isn't it?
Yeah. I got a bit obsessed about Napoleon. I think it happens to men of a certain age.
Just going back to Scott Walker, you sent and you talked about that Book Lovers track. He was quite taken by that track, wasn't he?
Funnily enough, I've heard this, but I don't know where this rumor has come from, because I don't think Scott was taken by anything I did, really.
Did he? Did you communicate with him, and did he get back to you, or was it one way?
I kept sending him my records just because I loved him, you know, and I sent Michael Nyman my records as well. I don't know what I thought was going to happen with them, but then Scott did an interview for the first time in like 8 years with the French magazine Les Incorruptibles in sort of 95. And he said, oh, yeah, that little Irish guy, he keeps sending me his records. I think he likes my earlier work more than my current stuff. And to me, that's all I needed. I framed it, put it on my wall. I didn't meet him a little later on. But it was a cursory sort of doorstepping, I'm not a very good fan, you know. I think my fans are better with me than I am with my heroes.
Your biggest hit, I guess, in the traditional sense, was National Express. That was in 1998 from the album Fin de Siècle. What were you going for in Fin de Siècle? How had you developed, let's say, from Casanova and Liberation?
Fresh from sort of a few hits and being on Top of the Pops and things, I just thought I was king of the world. And, you know, the record company was willing to give me a few more quid. And between myself and my band, and especially Joby Talbot, who played keyboards for us and was, you know, sort of a composer in his own right. We really threw the kitchen sink at that album. And when we weren't sort of bashing anvils on Sweden, we were sort of saying, let's get a choir. And so we got the Kretschen Festival Chorus, and they came in and did enormous sort of pseudo-operatic swells through various of the songs. I listen to it now and it's amazing. It's like a head wrecker, but it's extraordinary in many ways. And it's weirdly, for such an arty record, it has our biggest pop hit, National Express.
Jolly hostess selling crisps and tea.
National Express from Fin de Siècle, the 1998 Divine Comedy hit. And I'm talking to Neil Hannon. Neil, Venus, Cupid, Folly and Time. It's a wonderful box set with all your past albums and then essays in each CD. Then there's a book of lyrics which has photocopies of the actual manuscript of the lyrics you wrote. Can you describe it for us? And how did you put this marvellous thing together?
We meant to do a 20th anniversary, but we never got round to it. There was a few too many things going on at the time. So we really went for it for the 30th anniversary. And I'd always wanted a box set, I have to say. There's a CD at the beginning called Juvenilia, of all my earliest stuff. And it contains sort of recordings of demos that I made when I was 13, 14, 15. And I'd kept on this sort of best of cassette that I'd made at the time, because I knew even at the age of 15 that, oh, they'll need this for the extra CD in the 30th anniversary box set. That's how sure of myself I was. It is a lovely thing. And the art, my sort of artwork guy, Matt Cooper, is a bit of a genius. And together we sort of worked on the look of it. And, I chose the font, but he did most of the other stuff. I just wanted it to look like an old book, really.
Yes. And what about the essays then? Were they written at the time, or are they all written now, looking back on the albums?
No, they're all written this year. I started in sort of February, and then lockdown happened, and I really had no excuse. So I just wrote and did about 2,500 words for each record. I'm not good at looking back. It makes me feel kind of queasy. But once I sort of really dug into my memories, I was amazed what I did remember. And I almost enjoyed it.
Do you think, I mean, it's a wonderful Christmas present. Do you think this is for the Uber fan, or do you think this is for somebody who might just like to discover your art from the beginning? Who's your ideal buyer?
What, my ideal buyer is anyone with 125 quid. But no, I am honestly, I wouldn't recommend it for somebody who hasn't heard the Divine Comedy before and doesn't know whether they like it. For them, go and buy, Absent Friends or Victory for the Comic Muse, and you'll soon realize whether you actually enjoy it. But I think for people who know the Divine Comedy and what we do, I think they'd really get a lot out of it. And the fans seem to like it, who have got it in the post last week. And it'll certainly keep them busy for the rest of the year, because there's about 24 hours worth of music on it.
Yes, and also a very beautiful thing. Apart from working to bring this collection together, you also celebrated the 30th anniversary with a series of shows, which shouldn't normally sound unusual, but at the moment it's very unusual. So you performed in London and Paris just last month.
Oh, I'm afraid you have been misled. That was our intention, but obviously it didn't come to pass. We had to postpone those shows till next year, the same time and the same place. But the Barbican, where we were meant to do all of the albums back to back, they wanted to have all of their acts of the autumn come and do a sort of a streaming show. So we were there just last week, and we did an hour-long show in front of a sprinkling of fans.
Oh yes, that's obviously the review I read, and therefore I thought that you were going to go off and do a similar one in Paris. But no, this is hopefully in the future a set of live shows.
Yeah, I mean, the idea is to do it all next year at the same time. And I'm not too dispirited because it gives us an extra year to learn every single song in the catalogue, which is no mean feat.
One thing I wanted to ask you about, and all the Father Ted fans will kill me if I don't, is about the song Songs of Love from your 1996 album Casanova, which we played at the beginning. Which came first, the TV theme or the full song?
I started writing the tune, and I had that sort of in my back pocket, but it hadn't gone anywhere. Then I got the phone call from Graham Linehan asking me whether I'd have a crack at it. And I thought, yeah, I'll do that. I had no idea what the show would be like. But, you know, I wasn't getting an awful lot of phone calls with offers. So I gave them that tune and A Woman of the World, which is also on Casanova, which has a sort of nice, jaunty, whistly bit. And I remember Graham and Arthur loved the whistly one because they thought it sounded pure sitcom, like Some Mothers Do Have 'Em or something like that. But Jeffrey Perkins, the producer, went, no, we'll have the other one. It sounds Irish. And when it seemed likely that that would be the theme tune, I thought, well, if I make this into a song as well, then, it might sort of work together, and it did.
So it did. Let's listen. But while they search for a mate, my type hibernate in bedrooms above, composing their songs of love. Young uniform minds in uniform. Songs of Love there from the 1996 Divine Comedy album Casanova. Neil, is it true that there's talks of a Father Ted musical?
It's rather on ice, as you might expect. But, you know...
Were there songs written?
Lots, yeah.
All right, so it's there, but on ice because of the times we're in.
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, really, I didn't know sort of how long it would take when asked last year, and I really, really don't know how long it'll take now.
Great idea. There's something very chamber music about that song, Songs of Love, and your work is often described as chamber pop. Where did that label come from? Is it something you're comfortable with?
It tickles my sort of classical bent, but I'm not sure if it's very realistic because it only covers sort of one small part of what I do, really. I do like that sort of Baroque feel, partly because it reminds me of a lot of sort of other Baroque feel pop music, like some of XTC and The Stranglers, Golden Brown. And also there's a band called The Left Bank from the 60s, which if people don't know them, they have got to listen to them. It's like literally the best band you have never heard of. The Left Bank, bank with an E.
Okay, we have it. So are they people who inspire you? I mean, you have so many touchstones in that regard, from John Cage to Bertolt Brecht, Kurt Weill.
Yeah.
Michael Nyman, obviously.
Yeah, but then, you know, I love my classical as well. I love, you know, Vaughan Williams and Ravel and Stravinsky. And I love a lot of sort of bebop jazz. And so it kind of... and I also like extremely loud rock and roll when I'm in the mood. So it really... I think you can find sort of reference to all of it in there somewhere. But then I always kind of come back to my sort of comfort music, which really is sort of late 60s orchestral pop of the Scott Walker, Dusty Springfield. I shouldn't have said there because I can't think of any others.
One of the later albums, Office Politics, is another concept album, if you want to call it that. And Norman and Norma, we wanted to go out on that. Could you just introduce Norman Norman and Norma for us, Neil?
Norman and Norma is a little song about a couple from East Anglia who... you know, it starts with them getting married and going on holiday to Mallorca, and then they have lots of children and they can't afford to go to Mallorca. And then when it's all getting a bit sad and the kids have left, they turn to historical reenactment to get the juices flowing.
Fantastic.
So there you have it.
Did we do?
Married in Cromer, April 1983. It could have been warmer, but Norman and Norma were happy as they'd ever been. They flew to Mallorca and swam in the water. It felt just like having a bath.
Norman and Norma from Office Politics, from The Divine Comedy. I've been speaking to Neil Hannon about the three-decade career of The Divine Comedy. Venus, Cupid, Folly and Time. 30 years of The Divine Comedy is out now. It's available on CD, vinyl and digital download.